You're with Colorado Matters from CPR News. I'm Ryan Warner. Christina Brown has had quite a year. Last July, she drove from her home in Denver to Artesia, New Mexico. The newly certified immigration attorney heard that the Obama administration was detaining women and their children who'd crossed the border. She thought she'd stay a week, but stayed through the end of the year to coordinate pro bono legal help for hundreds of migrants. The federal government closed the facility in New Mexico in December, only to move some of the women and kids to another detention center in Texas. Brown followed, and she is recently back in Denver. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
So I understand that federal immigration authorities recently opened a permanent facility. This is in Dilley, Texas. But you turned down an opportunity to continue working as the coordinator for pro bono attorneys. Why?
You know, it was a very difficult 8 months working with women and children in jail. And so being in jail with them every day, hearing their stories over and over again, it's very wearing. There's a lot of secondary trauma associated with this type of work. And I felt like I needed to take care of myself a little more.
Secondary trauma. How did that manifest for you?
Well, lack of sleep. Nightmares, divorce, lots of really just difficult. It was difficult transitioning back to real life after leaving that sort of setting. And it's difficult to hear such stories without having really visceral reactions. Sometimes I just cry. So this it's been difficult.
This resulted in your own divorce, you're
yes,
saying?
Yes, yes.
You met hundreds of women and children in Artesia, New Mexico, that first site. You helped many of them get released on bond, pending an immigration hearing. And more than a dozen, as I understand it, got asylum in the U.S. Why don't you tell us about one of the families that was able to get asylum?
Oh, yes, of course. The first case we ever took to court in Artesia was the case of a Honduran woman. At the age of 17, she was kidnapped at gunpoint from her high school. She was taken into a car and violently raped. And then the man who had raped her told her he was going to take her away from her family. She would never see them again. And so she agreed to marry him. They were married for about 2 years, during which time he beat her regularly. He went to jail for 16 murders in Honduras, and during that time paid someone to bring her to the jail so that he could rape her there. This resulted in two children as a product of rape for her, and eventually she fled to her parents' home. After he was released from jail, he followed her. He stalked her down at her parents' home and started trying to rape her and beat her and telling her that she was his property and had to come home. And one night came and started shooting up the parents' house. And so she fled to the United States. We took her asylum case. That was the first case that we won in Artesia. And luckily for us, there was a new case down from the Board of Immigration Appeals saying that domestic violence can qualify someone for asylum. And so we won.
Domestic violence and then some in that case, it sounds like. And indeed, many of the people detained by the U.S. government came from Guatemala, Honduras, other Central American countries. Have the women and children who are detained passed the first step in the asylum process? So that's proving there's a reasonable chance that they're fleeing a credible fear, right?
Yes. So there's the initial step in a process when... Not to get into the complication of this, but they have to show the asylum office that they have a significant possibility of their eligibility for asylum. And so all of the women that are released on bond or win asylum in this setting have passed that first step.
I see. But not all of the women at a facility like Artesia have passed that first step?
Almost everyone in Artesia actually passed that first step once attorneys were on the ground. And at Dilley now, there are about 90% of people are passing that first step on their own.
Okay. This is Dilley, Texas, once again, where the permanent facility has opened. What was your daily routine like? So I understand you were working sometimes 19 hours a day at the Artesia facility in New Mexico.
Yes. So every morning we would get up at 7 o'clock and go to the facility for client meetings and court. We would stay to prepare people for court, to prepare their cases for asylum through 7 p.m. at night. And then all of the volunteers would go back to our office space and we would meet. We would discuss what had happened in the hearings that day. And then we would prepare for hearings the next day. and prepare release requests. So we worked until sometimes 2 a.m.
The hearings were often over video teleconference with a judge elsewhere, correct?
Always. Yes.
Always. Mm-hmm. Did deportation slow down over the course of the 6 months or so that you were in Artesia?
Yes. Before attorneys arrived in Artesia, about 250 people were deported, somewhere between 250 and 300. Once we arrived, I can't tell you an exact number of people who were deported, but we represented every person in that facility who wanted an attorney, and only the people who asked for their deportation were deported after we were on the ground.
There was a flock of attorneys, it sounds like, that were at the facility in New Mexico and I guess since have gone on to Texas.
There's actually, it's a volunteer effort. And so every week there are new volunteers who come to help at their own expense. That project has moved to Texas now that the Artesia cases have been closed.
Now you're working on appeals of some of the existing cases, correct? Something you can do from Denver. How have the women and children who were moved from Artesia reacted to the facilities in Texas?
This is a very traumatic experience for the women moved from Artesia. They have been detained for more than 10 months in a lot of circumstances. Most of them are now in the Karnes residential facility, though some are in Dilley. In both cases, their children aren't eating. Their children are sick. They can't get adequate medical care. And, you know, they have a lot of trauma associated with being in jail for so long with their babies.
You describe this as jail. ICE has a very different picture of these facilities. And I want to read part of a statement that these are an effective and humane alternative to maintain family unity as families await the outcome of immigration hearings or return to their home countries. It goes on to say ICE ensures that these residential centers operate in an open environment. Clearly, they had attorneys, which includes medical care, playrooms, social workers, educational services, and access to legal counsel, as we said. Sounds like a comfortable life compared to what some of these folks might have come from.
Well, it certainly sounds comfortable in that light. It's too bad that that isn't accurate. In most of these facilities, people are separated not only from their husbands who cross the border with them in a lot of cases, but also from older children who are sometimes sent away and parents don't even know where they are. There's a case in Dilley right now of a 14-year-old girl who crossed with her mother and was separated from her. She doesn't even know if she made it to the United States. So the mother and her young child are in jail and were separated from a teenage child who was attempting to come with her to the U.S. That doesn't sound like family unity to me. And this woman can do nothing for her children while she's in prison.
And as to the environment itself, I mean, this idea that there is medical care, there are playrooms, education.
You know, I will talk to you about Karnes because the Dilley facility
is both in
Texas, yes. Two of the three family detention centers now. So in Karnes, there are guards that walk you down the hallway, locked doors. People have to request through their deportation officer to go see medics and are often refused. When they go see the medics will tell them that they just need to drink bottled water. I have a woman who is in detention with a heart condition that her mother and her father both died from at young ages, and ICE refuses to give her medication. Those don't sound like the conditions that ICE is describing. And unfortunately, we've seen the same situation happening for 10 months, no matter where these women and children are housed.
Well, I will say that we requested an interview of ICE, but they only provided us with a written statement. It said also at the Dilley facility's current capacity is 960. Construction is continuing to expand it to 2,400. And again, family residential centers are an effective and humane alternative for maintaining family unity. The Secretary of Homeland Security has made it clear that individuals apprehended at the border, including families, are an agency priority and that ICE should allocate enforcement resources accordingly. But what I want to ask you about in particular, Christina, is that this appears to be a policy shift for President Obama, who closed a Bush administration detention facility in 2009. Then 5 years later, the Obama White House started detaining women and children. So that's last summer. And in a statement in November, Thomas Winkowski, who works for ICE, said these facilities help ensure timely and effective removals that comply with our legal and internal obligations. What's your response to what appears to be an evolution, a shift, you know, depending on your viewpoint on this, a flip-flop in the administration?
I think that this is a very hypocritical stance on the Obama administration's behalf. The night that Obama discussed executive action and discussed his priority for removal of criminal aliens, felons, and keeping families together, my clients were moved without any warning from Artesia, New Mexico, to Texas, without any notification to their attorneys. You know, the continued enforcement on women and children, it doesn't add up. Jay Johnson says none of these people are going to qualify for asylum. They'll all be deported. But we've shown that that's not true. These are legitimate asylum seekers under the laws of our country, and they should be protected under the laws of our country. There's
this
no reason for this shift.
Head of Homeland Security, we should say.
Yes.
There is this question about whether detention facilities like this can serve as deterrents to those who would make the crossing and not wait for things to be in order before they come. What do you think of that?
Well, I think that the courts have made this very clear. The U.S. District Court for the District of Columbia recently issued an injunction on the no bond policy for ICE in this detention setting, saying that you can't use a deterrence argument to house women and children in a jail. And it's a violation of U.S. immigration laws and the due process clause of the Fifth Amendment.
The idea that these facilities are deterrents does not have legal standing, according to that ruling.
Yes, it doesn't have legal standing. And honestly, we're seeing from the numbers, it's not even accurate. People aren't fleeing here for economic reasons. You can't deter someone whose choice is die in my country or try to seek the protection of another country's laws.
I understand you've heard about a preliminary order, I think from a federal judge in California. Briefly, does it add momentum to your fight here?
Yes. That was a lawsuit to enforce the Flores Agreement, which basically deals with the detention of children and under what conditions they can be detained. And this judge tentatively said, basically, these detention facilities don't meet the standards required to detain children, and their policy of detaining mothers goes against the settlement agreement's prioritization of releasing children to their family members. So if the continued settlement doesn't go forward, this ruling will become final. And hopefully that will be the beginning of the end of family detention in the U.S.
And that was my next question, which is, what do you see as an ideal outcome here? Is it that the facilities improve and become more hospitable places in your mind? Or is it that the policy in general stops altogether? And is that a reasonable outcome?
There's no humane way to detain children and mothers who are fleeing violence, victims of really severe trauma. There's no humane way to do that here. It doesn't matter how comfortable your jail cell is. It's still a jail cell. And if you have a 3-month-old with you in jail, you have to continue waking them up for counts. You have to ask for permission to use the restroom. You have to ask for permission to go see a doctor. Those are not conditions in which to detain women and children. And so my ideal outcome is we don't do that anymore. We follow the laws of this country. We let them live with family members who can financially support them. And we let them fight their asylum claims that they have shown are legitimate under our laws.
Is there the risk, though, that they would try to disappear and then stay in the country illegally?
I think that's a concern of a lot of people. But there's a 2013 report from Lutheran Immigrant and Refugee Services on alternatives to detention that states that 93% of asylum seekers attend court. And when they have legal counsel, that number rises to 97% of asylum seekers. So these women and children are very unlikely to just skip the process and remain here without documentation.
How long do you imagine you'll be working on this?
Until it ends, until we can get all the women and children out of jail. This is my passion now. So,
and there are other Denver and Colorado-based attorneys as part of this team, correct?
So many. We've had a very strong outpouring of support and advocacy from Colorado's American Immigration Lawyers Association chapter, and hopefully that will continue.
Thank you for being with us.
Thank you very much.
So that's Christina Brown. She's an immigration attorney in Denver. And I'll reiterate that ICE refused our request for an interview. You can read their statement if you'd like at our website, cprnews.org. This is Colorado Matters from CPR News.